our friend Braden Gall from Nashville, SiriusXM, the Cover 2 podcast as well with Athlon Sports. Braden, good afternoon. We appreciate the time as always. I saw on Twitter you were kind of asking aloud about the status maybe of blue blood programs in college football. As you started to go through the thought process on that, what kind of came to mind? What kind of reaction? What kind of yelling did you hear from people on Twitter when all that came up?
Normal amounts of Twitter yelling, but at least it was about sports instead of something else. I'm fascinated. Like, realignment is like total catnip to me as a college football junkie. It's teams, it's rivalries, it's geography, it's big business. But the other one that's like catnip to me is sort of expectation setting for programs sort of over time, not necessarily under a current coach or, you know, with a current, you know, group of players or whatever. It's, and to me, I've always called it national championship DNA. It's very hard, I think, to change your DNA. I think that's probably why, you know, I use that phrase. And of course, a lot of people asking about Tennessee. Again, people are like, well, how is Tennessee this or that or whatever with the last 15 years? And I say, guys, it's a bigger picture conversation than that. It's about two things to me. I define, and again, we probably have this conversation before, but I define national championship DNA, like in your core. Again, I hope I don't have to explain DNA to people, but access to players and unlimited resources, both from the university and from the fans, and Tennessee checks every box. In fact, I think what's interesting about Tennessee is it gets knocked for its recruiting base. And if you just tell somebody on Twitter, hey, draw a 6-hour radius around Knoxville, Tennessee, and tell me what states you hit. And I think people will be shocked at how many players come from within that 6-hour radius. And, you know, not to mention the growth of the mid-state and in-state talent as well. So I don't think it's even close. I would have Tennessee probably the 11th, 12th, 13th best quote-unquote program in America. And if you really start, you know, looking at lists, I think the fringe teams are the more interesting debates. You know, UCLA, Oregon, Wisconsin, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, you know, those Oklahoma State, like really good programs, but have never really competed for national championships since integration, really. Like Michigan State's a good program. It got to the playoff once, but it's largely been a non-factor in the national championship race for 50, 60 years. So, I think there's proof of concept, certainly with Tennessee. You're the seventh winningest program. You've got unlimited money. You know, you've won national championships in multiple decades under multiple coaches. I think Tennessee goes without saying that they have what it takes to win national titles. No program is immune from bad decision-making, and Tennessee's, let's just call it, had some bad decision-making lately.
So by your argument, you can gain national championship DNA and you can never lose it?
Probably with one exception, and I think the Big Ten schools and namely Nebraska have struggled from this. If all of a sudden the human beings start moving away from your campus, that's a population shift is one way that can happen. And I think that's why if you look at Nebraska since 1995, you look at Michigan, again, outside of Ohio State in 2002 and 2014, you have Michigan in 97. You have to go all the way back to the 60s to find a Big Ten team claim a national championship. Penn State won a couple in the 80s as an independent. Nebraska won three as a Big 12 and Big 8 team. And Nebraska's been hurt the most by this because the modernization of recruiting, how you accelerate the calendar, and all of a sudden you're getting kids on campus, you know, unofficially as sophomores and juniors. And if you wait till the official visit period, or at least the old official visit period, which was in the fall of a senior year, you've already missed the boat on a recruit. And it didn't used to be like that. Prop 48 was also a big reason why Nebraska was so good. Scholarship limitations. So I think the rules that have been put in place and then population trends have hurt Nebraska and the Big Ten schools. But as long as the access to players and the best players come from, even more so today than ever before, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Ohio's a really good state for talent, but Pennsylvania doesn't produce the same number of elite-level athletes as it did in the 60s and 70s and 80s. The Rust Belt population trend hurt the Big Ten. So Nebraska, I would say, has lost a little bit of that. Miami is another really interesting one. It's hard to argue that they have arguably the best recruiting base in the entire country, but their fan base is pretty fickle. It's not as loyal. Stadium's off campus. They don't spend a ton of money, even though it's a private school. Like, it's just, if you put Nebraska and Miami together, you have the perfect football program, because Nebraska has, like, second to none facilities, second to none fans, second to none money, and zero athletes within 6 hours of their campus, and Miami's sort of the exact opposite. So I think you have to have both of those things. It's what makes Texas A&M so fascinating, because they have both of those things in spades and have never really competed for national championships, you know, in 50 or 60 years. So I think A&M is fascinating. Clemson and Georgia would be in those quote-unquote sleeping giant phases, but we know that those two teams compete for national championships. We've seen it happen over the last 30 or 40 years.
Braden Gall with us, the Cover 2 podcast with Athlon Sports, Sirius XM. Oregon seems to possess a lot of spike potential, right? Like you note with Mariota, you can make a jump, but in terms of investment, we've seen them succeed. Energy that can be around the program, is Oregon one of those make a leap programs where the potential can be a lot higher than what we've seen overall?
Yeah, and the Pac-12 in general has programs that I'm just not sure about. Like, I think Washington, you know, they won a national title in the 90s. They got back to a Rose Bowl in 2000. They made it to the playoff in 2015. So, like, there's clearly some proof of concept there, but there's not as much access to talent. Same thing with Oregon. You know, you've played in the national championship game twice in the last 10 years. That's pretty good. And for a program that maybe doesn't have national title DNA, I think Oregon's the one program. Because the last shift for me would have been the Florida, the Sunshine Surge, if you will, when Florida State, and Miami in the 80s all of a sudden became powerhouses, right? Like, it's all of a sudden, and we know why. It's because integration in the late 60s and 70s, and all of a sudden all these athletes in Florida were going to Miami, Florida State, and Florida, and all of a sudden three programs that largely weren't winning anything elevated themselves to sort of blue blood status, and now no one would argue that those three programs can't win, although Miami, like I just said, sort of is in this weird no man's land. Oregon is the only program I've seen in the last 20, 25 years that sort of elevated itself to that top tier, and that's because their facilities and their money and their resources are arguably second to none. I mean, they are as cool and as hip and as trendy with kids as it gets. And, you know, you've done it with multiple coaches. I think historically you'd say, well, Oregon is in that second tier that needs to have a transcendent quarterback to probably get to the national title conversation, whether that's Russell Wilson at Wisconsin, you know, Michael Vick at Virginia Tech, you know, 2011 Oklahoma State that almost played for the national championship. You know, you have to have, you know, Pat White with West Virginia. Like, you need a transcendent talent at quarterback for those second tier teams to be good. And you could look at Darren Thomas in 2010 and then Marcus Mariota in 14 as two of those guys. I just think Oregon is the most interesting to discuss because, they're going into California right now and they're dominating the Pac-12 in recruiting. And if they can continue to prove that they can do that, I don't know why they wouldn't be as dangerous as a USC or a Washington or anyone else, you know, west of Texas.
Braden, something else that's going on sort of in college football is the stadium put out a survey asking – anonymously for athletic directors to vote whether they would be in favor of expanding the playoff. It looked like a resounding 88% is in favor of that. Whenever the current deal is done, do you see expansion? And then could you work more of the blue blood conversation into an 8-team playoff where more teams are actually competing for the national title?
It's really funny. So I am a staunch anti-expansionist. I'm good with four. I don't want it to go bigger.
I'm with you.
I like how feelings get. I like that people's feelings are hurt at the end of the year. I think that's good for the sport. I think it makes. I want it to be exclusive. I don't want it to be easy to get in. But here's what people don't think, and it's just common sense. But it doesn't, like, I think you're going to trim the blue blood list even further, not expand it. That's the problem with this, because if you're a lot of those programs I just mentioned, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Wisconsin, Virginia Tech, you know, North Carolina is going to be really good this year. You look at these programs that are sort of on that level. Baylor and TCU have come close to the playoff. Oregon, Washington, UCLA, like Michigan State, so many really good, viable winning programs that normally don't ever sniff a national championship. You're telling me the ones that couldn't do it when all they had to do was win one game in the BCS era and all they have to do now is win two games, that they're going to all of a sudden be able to win three games? You're actually going to make it harder to win the national championship. And people don't, if you ask coaches, they will tell you, like, there's no way that a coach at Wisconsin wants to have to play in the Big Ten championship game against probably Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State. Then you're going to have to play in back-to-back-to-back games in a tournament. You're going to have to play Georgia, Texas, and Clemson. Like, you're telling me Wisconsin's athletes are going to stand up against that gauntlet four games in a row? I just think people don't realize, like, if you expand, you're actually making it harder to win the championship than you are making it easier. And I don't think anybody truly grasps that. And athletic directors, they're going to go with the money. Like, ADs, presidents, TV people, of course it's going to expand because everyone's going to make more money. And so that's, you know, and coaches, some coaches like it on the surface because if they get into the playoff, they're going to get a bonus and a boost and it makes them look great. And they get to be included in the playoffs the way 9-7 teams get to be included in the playoffs in the NFL. But you're not any closer to winning a national championship if you're Missouri. You know, like if you're South Carolina, like you're not going to win unless you have, Alshon Jeffrey, Marshawn Lattimore, and Michael Vick on the same team. Like, you're just not going to win the SEC, go through that gauntlet, and then win three straight games in national championship caliber performances. I just don't see why would that be possible if it hasn't been possible for 50 years when all you had to do was win one game in the BCS or two in the playoff era.
You can find him on Twitter at Braden Gall. Braden, what can college football fans find with the Cover 2 podcast?
So we did a really deep media dive. I brought back Mitch Light, co-host previously, now of The Athletic, managing the state of Tennessee as a managing editor. And he and I did a really deep dive over an hour just about how fans are the best fact checkers. You know, sports fans are the best fact checkers in the world. And there's so much pressure on fans from a media standpoint to decipher between what's real, what's information, what's news, what's reporting, what's opinion. It's not just sports, it's everywhere. So we did a really long, deep media dive looking at how the landscape has changed and what you have to do to sort of parse out information. And the college football, frankly, is probably the sport that's hurt the most by the current media landscape because there's no information and coaches control all of it. And then we had a little bit lighter conversation today on the pod. I went live today, argued about beer, and we argued about, old football, style of play from the 80s and 90s, and, had a little bit more fun. What would it look like if college football came back with no fans, with no conference play? A little bit lighter conversation, a little bit more fun today. So check out the last two episodes, Cover 2 on iTunes or Cover 2 on Spotify, Athlon Sports on iTunes. Rate, review, and subscribe, please.
Yeah, friendly conversations are very important, friendly arguments right now, because too much of other stuff going on out there. Enjoy it on the Cover 2 podcast. Yes. Subscribe and download. Braden, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much, and we will talk to you next week.
Yep, absolutely. Stay home, stay safe. Thanks, guys.